Lord has said to me, you shall not go over the Jordan. Continuing in verse 14. And the Lord said to Moses, behold, the days approach when you must die. Call Joshua and present yourself in the tent of meeting that I might commission him. Carrying the thought on in verse 16. And the Lord said to Moses, behold, you are about to lie down with your fathers. And then this people will rise and whore after the foreign gods amongst them in the land where they are entering. And they will forsake me and break my covenant that I have made with them. The culmination of those words is found in Deuteronomy 34 in the first seven verses. And Moses went up from the plains of Moab to Mount Nebo to the top of Pisgah, which is opposite Jericho. And the Lord showed him all the land, Gilead as far as Dan, all Naphtali, the land of Ephraim and Manasseh, the land of Judah as far as the western sea, the Negeb and the plain, this is the valley of Jericho, the city of palm trees, as far as Zoar. And the Lord said to him, this is the land of which I swore to Abraham, to Isaac and Jacob. I will give it to your offspring. I have let you see it with your eyes, but you shall not go over there. And so Moses, the servant of the Lord, died there in the land of Moab, according to the word of the Lord. And he buried him in the valley in the land of Moab, opposite Beth Peor. But no one knows the place of his burial to this day. Moses was 120 years old when he died, and his eye was undimmed, nor his vigor abated. Such is the destiny of every preacher. Every preacher that you have known, and every preacher that I have known, one day will meet this fate, the fate of death, unless the Lord comes before then. It is a sobering thought that one day the work that I do, the ministries that I'm involved in, the places that I'm able to preach, that I won't be there. Perhaps for some they find comfort in that, but I think for all of us, as we think about the thought of empty pulpits, that we begin to wonder who is going to take that place. I have seen, I have heard, I have learned from so many great preachers, and in my time, I have discovered this. They all ultimately end with the same fate. They are going to transcend from this life into the life that is to come, and if you will, their pulpit will be left empty. From the passages that I just read in Deuteronomy 31 and verse 34, in 31 and in chapter 34, there are four takeaways for me in regards to this particular subject. First of all, God is clear to Moses that his time will end, and for myself as well as any other preacher, that is a certainty. The appointment with death is one that we cannot postpone of our own power nor cancel because we do not desire it. Number two is the fact that another will be needed to continue our work. As Moses had his Joshua, and there would be those that would succeed Joshua, that there will be those individuals that will need to, if you will, take up the flag of ministry after I am gone and continue that work. Thirdly, I realized, as it was in Israel, that though Moses was dying, and that there would be someone in the person of Joshua to take his place, that the people are still going to be a train wreck. In other words, I cannot find comfort in the fact that when I die, so will the need for ministry. In other words, there will be the work that needs to go on. The gospel will need to be advanced. Individuals who are not yet Christians will need to learn about that. Those who are Christians that have perhaps fallen along the wayside, they will again need to be admonished. Those who are working diligently will need to be encouraged until the final coming of the Lord. But I do find comfort in what Deuteronomy 34 says regarding, at the very end that I read there regarding Moses. And that was that his vigor was not abated. And it's the fourth thing that I realize. That until such time as the Lord calls me home, whether it's in 30 years or in 30 minutes, I need to be busy about training my replacement. And that's what I have sought to do for over the last 20 years. In 2 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 2, I see one of those twos is gone, but that's too little or too many. In 2 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 2, the Apostle Paul encourages his protege, his young preacher that he's mentoring, to equip individuals that they may equip others. It is the work and the role that I have sought to do over the last 20 years through a series of opportunities. There has been the opportunity, as was mentioned just a moment ago, for me to be involved in preacher training camps. I did my first preacher training camp in 1997 at the Bear Valley Bible Institute in Denver. Since then, I have been able to work with five different camps, one in Denver, one in Abilene, one in Louisville, the camp here at North MacArthur, and an Eagle camp, which is for boys 8 to about 13 in Blanchard, Oklahoma. Representing, I did the math today, about 65 different camp sessions. In addition to that, I have had the opportunity to work with the Bear Valley Bible Institute for 16 years as an adjunct instructor. I taught four different courses and served as a fill-in before Tammy and I moved there a few years ago to move to California. In addition to that, along with my partner Bob Turner, we produced 85 different podcast episodes specifically to train preachers, especially young preachers. I've had the opportunity to be a part of camps, workshops, written in a chapter or two in some preaching books, and been able to write a number of articles regarding the art and science of preaching. I do not say that I might have you look at me in any high regard. I simply want you to know that finding my replacement has been something that I have taken seriously over the last 20 years. In fact, it is only by the grace of God that I have had the opportunity in these endeavors. And it is only by His power and working that there has been any success in them whatsoever. And so I wanted to share with you as we begin tonight, or as we get started, I want to share with you a few of those successes that I have had an opportunity. Here are just some pictures over the years of those individuals at those preacher training camps. Some of you know Tyler King from Bear Valley. That's Tyler when he was not much younger than he is now. He wasn't shaving then. He isn't shaving now. Many of you know Steve Schinnerer, who was responsible for beginning the Eagle camp down at Cherokee Hills. And we were together again this year in Blanchard doing the Eagle camp. There's a much thinner version of me talking to some young students. These are some pictures from the Louisville preacher training camp over the years from Bear Valley. And then, as has been my opportunity to teach and train regarding the art and science of preaching. And so, in 65 sessions, I had the same basic outline. A sermon has a body, an introduction, and a conclusion. And for you to have a great sermon, have a powerful introduction and a dynamic conclusion, and keep those two as close together as is possible. Really, with my young campers, I tell them that the purpose for our time together is to allow them to get up before a group of listeners without throwing up. For my older campers, I tell them that my responsibility is to help them stand up in front of an audience, a group of listeners, without the listeners throwing up. But ultimately, my job is to help them see beyond the Clark Kent of their inadequacies, for them to see what God is ready to do below the surface. Here are a few of the young men that I've had the opportunity. This is Aaron Austin, who in spite of a number of physical problems that have affected his head and neck, serves as the pulpit preacher in Crowder, Oklahoma. He was one of my campers. Here is Alex Warrens and his wife Lindsay. They have just taken a position in Chickasha, Oklahoma, with the Southern Oaks congregation. I always want to say Southern Hills, as their evangelism minister. This is Brett Petrillo. His father, Denny Petrillo, is the president of the Bear Valley Bible Institute. Brett grew up alongside of my children. He was not a student, not only in preacher camp, but also at the Bear Valley Bible Institute. And I gave him an A-, which he did not like, because Brett came into the program an excellent preacher. And when he said, how come I got the A-, I did all the required work, and I told him, well, I expected something more than what was required from you. And he, with some frustration, said, well, how in the world would I get an A then in your class? And I said, just by doing better. And I left it at that. And that's exactly what he's done. He has proved to be a great young man who is the youth and family minister at Bear Valley right now. This is one that I'm especially proud of. This is Amy. She is married to my son, Daniel, who I'm also proud of. Daniel serves as the youth minister for the Saturn Road congregation. I suppose that if there was anybody that got direct hands-on tutelage from me, it would be Daniel. In fact, at times, it was very hands-on. He has been serving there for a couple of years, having served here at the Britton Road congregation in Oklahoma City before that. Here is, I always have to look down because everyone, the Warrens family have a number of children, all which have the name that starts with an A. And so every time I have to look down and see which one this is, but this is Anthony Warrens and his wife Andrea, who currently he serves as the pulpit minister in Corsicana, Texas. You might recognize this young man. This is Jack Dodgen and his wife Anna. Jack is the associate minister in Manford, Oklahoma. He is a product of not only preacher training camps, but a product of this congregation. And he is involved in so many other works. We just had him part of our True Ministry Conference. He is a respected writer and blogger. His work goes far beyond what he does at Manford, but according to one of his elders who I spoke to day before yesterday, he is doing a little of everything for them, and they are so proud of him. I'll just tell you this, his daddy's over here, so I guess I've got a safety check valve on this, but I just was really concerned if he'd ever make it because it was hard to get two words out of Jack. And now I can't get him to hush. Okay. Anna's brother Jack, who is now in Forney, Texas, he is a staff writer for Think Magazine and Focus Press. Again, he himself is involved in a number of efforts. This is Jonathan and his wife Lacey Kroll. They were, he was at first a preacher camper, then he was a student of mine at the Bear Valley Bible Institute, and he now serves not only as the minister in, associate minister in Enid, Oklahoma, but at the Garriott Road congregation, but he also serves as a counselor himself now in the preacher training camps. This is Jared Mays. Jared is a graduate after preacher's camp, went on to Harding University and helped them to establish their preaching, kind of a preacher camp that was a little more intensive. And he is now in Massachusetts, where he serves in a full-time capacity. This is Mikhail Grayling, who came from South Africa. And he was at first a preacher camper in Louisville, and then he was a counselor, and now he is back in Europe, between Europe and Africa, doing work as an evangelist in a co-care program that helps Christians throughout the world. This is Josh Byers. Josh has one of those guys that he was a camper that I just can't quite imagine seeing him as anything but a little guy. This is he and his wife, Kimberly. He is at one of my favorite named congregations ever. He is at the Wayndale congregation in Huntington, Indiana. This here is Josh Watkins. At the time this picture was taken, that is his fiance Ashley, but they are now married and have a child. I had kind of lost a little bit of touch with him, but he is, again, he is working in Louisville, Kentucky as their pulpit minister. Right here is Nick Ree. He always corrects me, and so if he were here, he would tell me his name is spelled R-E-A. And I said, that looks like Rhea to me, and he said, it isn't. And so I said, it isn't. He is in Okemah, Oklahoma, where he serves as their pulpit minister. This is one of two Spencer boys. This happens to be, I say Spencer boys, two of the New Bern boys. This is Spencer, who is now in vocational ministry for a congregation in Burlington, Colorado, that has had a real hard time keeping a full-time minister. They lost their church building to a fire. Their finances were not very good. He serves as their pulpit minister, and then he works a regular job to pay his bills. Right here is Tommy Maxwell. Tommy Maxwell, after preacher training camp, went to the AIM program, Adventures in Missions, at Sunset in Lubbock, and then through the Sunset Preaching School program, and then served as a missionary in Scotland until a series of events caused the evacuation of a number of missionaries in Scotland with threats to their life. And now he is in Waurika, Oklahoma, where he serves. His wife, who is right there, you probably do not know her, but you probably know her brother, Wes McAdams. He is married to Wes's sister. And then we have right here one of my personal friends, Wesley Walker. He was a product of Bear Valley as a son of a student who then became a preacher camper, who then became a student, who now works as the pulpit minister for the Woodson Chapel Church in Nashville, Tennessee. He has achieved his master's degree, and he teaches throughout the country in a variety of programs, including now, though it's hard for me to believe that that snot-nosed kid now is one of the instructors in the master's program at Bear Valley. That is his wife, Amanda. Right here is Spencer Ross. Spencer Ross has been working for the last few years at the Keller Church of Christ, where he helped to establish their Titus School, which is for young men a little bit younger than the preacher camp age. Spencer has just moved to the Northwest Church in Fort Worth, Texas, as he has gone to work as an ambassador for the World Bible Institute, and they are overseeing that particular work. This is Troy Rogers. I would say it's hard for me to imagine Troy as grown up. It doesn't, because Troy still looks like a little child to me. He is about the only preacher still shorter than me, and I do not hesitate reminding him. However, what he lacks in physical stature, he makes up for in spiritual stature as he works with the Northwest congregation in Lawton, Oklahoma. In addition to his work with that church, he is an instrumental part of their campaign work of training other churches to be evangelistic, doing great campaigns. One of the last campaigns that he directed, they conducted 146 Bible studies during that campaign with over 40 baptisms as a result of it. And Troy has grown to be a good communicator as well. I don't know who this guy is. We'll move on quickly. No, this is Remington, or Remy Afri, again a product of the North MacArthur congregation. And if Remy was here, I would say this in front of him. Remy was going to change the world before he knew how to change the world. When he left off to the Bear Valley Bible Institute, I had absolutely no hope for him to succeed in that program, because at that point, he thought he had figured it all out. He admitted later that he hadn't, and he showed great humility and great efforts. He completed that program, and now is the pulpit minister in Stigler, Oklahoma, only taking time in Colorado to get him a wife and a degree. Okay. Zane Copeland, who until just recently was the minister of the Leedy, Oklahoma Church of Christ. Zane came to a preacher training camp with the intent of being a lawyer. His father was a respected lawyer, and that was his career pursuit. After preacher's camp and college, he decided that lawyer was not the work. Instead, he wanted to defend the truth, and that's what he did. And here, just a month or so ago, he packed his family their belongings and has taken up permanent residency in China, where he will be a missionary of the gospel there. John Marble, who currently works with the Southwest Church in Ada, Oklahoma. Again, he and his cousin were one of my early preacher campers. After he completed his camp work, he went on to college and then served as a missionary for a number of years on the island of Haiti before returning back to the state. I don't have any idea how that picture got in there. That shouldn't be there. I'm sorry about that. That's embarrassing. This isn't working now. I can't get it turned. Oh, yes, that's right. Lest there is not adequate credit, I need not to give you a resume or to explain to you the value of having a young man who has gone through the program, been educated in college, gone on to a preaching school and working right amongst you. And we are proud of Jeremy and Carrie as well. There are many more. In fact, this is a picture from a few years ago with our Eagle Camp down at Cherokee Hills. Many of these young men are growing up and growing into ministry. They're going on to further their education at universities, at preaching schools, and in the School of Hard Knocks. Some of them are not going into full-time ministry. Some of them have chosen a career path, and there's nothing wrong with that, but I have found that many of them are instrumental, fundamental, working. Here's the problem, at least it is for me. I, too, am going the way of my fathers. It is certain that I am dying. I don't know if, as I said earlier, if the Lord is going to grant me 30 more years or 30 more minutes. But I know that with the time that I have, I need to be about the business of training my replacement. But I cannot do it by myself. I do not have the time. I do not have all the expertise. And each year I find I don't have as much of the energy. I'm going to need someone. Let me correct that. The church is going to need someone to. I need to correct that. Jesus needs someone to help me. Someone who will also see the value in helping to train my replacement. It is from Romans chapter 10 that the Apostle Paul put it well. How will they call upon him who they have not believed? And how are they to believe of him whom they have not heard? And how are they to hear without someone who will preach to them? I might take that even one step further. And how are they to preach if no one are selected and no one is trained and no one is sent? That is the work that I have been involved in and the work that I want to invite you to be involved in. I want to give you three ways tonight that you can be involved in helping to train not only my replacement, but the replacement of all of those preachers who have already gone on and the many more who are taking their place in line to soon follow. First of all, continue to support the work of the North MacArthur Church of Christ in their preacher training camps. And by that, I mean more than just patting yourself on the back and saying, what a good church I'm a part of. But I'm talking about you taking an active role in that work. First of all, thanking those who have done that great work for 13 years, who labor over it, who organize it, who plan for it, who sleep here over that week. from the elders all the way down to the lowest position at any church, youth minister, and all of those in between. Be sure that you thank them and that you encourage them and that you ask of them in what ways that you can serve, because it is a fantastic opportunity. It is important for you to also select from, maybe just right here, young men, and encourage them to attend. A number of years ago at the camp that I do in Abilene, Texas, they had, they had their max amount, 26 campers. That's all that they could handle. And then they graduated 12 senior boys. And so their camp all of a sudden realized, boy, we'd been relying entirely on our young men. But I can also tell you that the first two or three years that we did preacher camp at Louisville, they, though the church was of some size, 600-700 at the time, they had no campers from that congregation. So one of the ways that you can support that is to encourage your sons and your grandsons and those young men in this congregation to be a part of that. And then in that word that none of us really like because the pay is lousy, but that is volunteer. There are so many different ways that that camp relies on the work and the help of individuals, whether it has to do with providing transportation, perhaps it is to house someone who is a speaker, maybe it is for food that needs to be provided, maybe it is that simply you need to take out your checkbook and write a check and give it to one of the elders and say, I want this put towards the preacher training camp as that budget grows, needs to grow every year. I remember a moment ago I mentioned Zane Copeland, who was in Leedy, Oklahoma, and now in China, that at the end of camp every year that he was a participant, his dad walked up and handed the director of that camp a sizable check. It wasn't to cover the cost of his son being there. It wasn't even as a thank you for his son being there. It was a recognition that this was a great work that needed not to have the encumbrance of finances. Continue to support the North MacArthur Preacher Training Camp. Number two, mentor young men towards preaching. There's a couple ways to do that. First of all, on an individual basis, not we as a congregation, you as North MacArthur, but you as an individual said, I am going to look for young men that I can encourage to preach. I remember a friend of mine, Dr. J.J. Turner, who was formerly the president of the Bear Valley Bible Institute, that J.J. always greeted every young man about 17 years of age under by saying, hello, preacher. And in a day and an age in which that can be kind of an insult to some, it is, as J.J. would follow it up, God had only one son and he was a preacher. That's good enough for me. And that encouragement of young men to take their place in some course of study. Maybe it is encouraging them to be part of a preacher training camp. Maybe it is for you to look beyond your walls and encourage them to be part of a second preacher training camp. I had a young man this year was that at three of the preaching camps that I was involved in. Maybe it is for you to encourage them to take advantage of something like Lads to Leaders or LTC, some other program that also promotes preaching. Then to see that they are directed towards a university, not with simply a degree, the accolades of academia, but towards a training that will equip them to be better equipped to advance the cause of Christ. Maybe a school of preaching. And then to take not only that one individual and then to mentor them and to see them off into school and then look at them with the possibility of them coming back after their schooling and continuing to be trained. Austin, where are you? Stand up. I told you you weren't getting out of tonight without being completely embarrassed. It's time for payback, buddy. Austin here, product of this church, through the preacher training camp, off to Bear Valley, completed the course of study, and got a wife along the way. and has come back to serve as your interim as long as you'll have him. I know there's a timeline, but maybe they'll just keep you. That's right. Thank you, Austin. There are dozens of young men like Austin who are full of enthusiasm, having been trained and ready to be about the work. Your work does not need to end simply because you send them out of preacher camp, send them off to school, or send them on to their first work. And maybe it is that you have an opportunity to help them financially. Austin can tell you that in all of that schooling, it was not always financially viable. From his circumstances and situations, I don't know how he survived it financially, but he did. And there are many more like him. It may very well be that the next great preacher is amongst you now. You just don't know it yet. And you have the opportunity to be instrumental in that. Number three, don't kill them. But I mean that with a more serious note. As I prepared the slideshow for tonight showing all of those preacher camp successes, I started with a database of pictures that I had from a previous presentation about 5 years ago. And as I went through that, I had to delete 4 or 5 individuals. Some who have left preaching, some who have even left the faith. I am plagued in my private messaging, my email, my text messages, and some other Facebook groups I'm involved in, with a daily report of a young man who has quit preaching, simply put, because the church has eaten him alive. It should not be. It is unfortunate, and in the grand scheme of things, it is not only he and his family that will pay that price, but we will pay it as well. Because one day we will find that the pulpits that we have are vacant, or they are occupied by those who have no business being in the pulpit. I am serious when I say that I need you to encourage young men. Those who are already preaching. I know it is easy to appoint yourself as the expert in preaching, as you have said for years and years and years and years and years, and listen to preaching, that you feel it incumbent upon you to critique them for everything from their appearance to the way that they pronounced Maller, Haller, Shazbaz. But for those young men, what they need is an encouraging word. They need someone who lifts them up. Someone who sees, though they may be a diamond in the rough, they are a diamond nonetheless and deserving of encouragement. Invest in them. Pray for them. Don't kill them. We will need to fill these pulpits one day. Again, Timothy writes, I don't know what it is about that too that just doesn't want to stay. 2 Timothy chapter 4, the first 5 verses, the Apostle Paul writing some of the final words that he will write. Certainly, the final words that he will write to a young evangelist. He says, I charge you in the presence of God and of Christ Jesus, who is to judge the living and the dead, and by his appearing and his kingdom, preach the word. Be ready in season, out of season, reprove, rebuke, and exhort with complete patience and instruction. For the time is coming when people will not endure sound doctrine or sound teaching, but having itching ears, they will accumulate for themselves teachers to suit their own passions. They will turn away from listening to the truth and wander off into myth. As for you, always be sober-minded, endure suffering, do the work of an evangelist, and fulfill your ministry. That charge is given to Timothy and those like him who have taken the work and responsibility of being a preacher. And then he gives one more statement, but I believe it becomes a charge not only to Timothy and to preachers, but to all of us. And Paul simply writes, "For I am already being poured out as a drink offering. The time of my departure has come. I have fought the good fight. I have finished the race. I have kept the faith. There is laid up for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will award to me on that day, and not only to me, but to all of those who have loved and waited on his appearing. Our time is passing. The need is great. There are young men amongst us who are ready to take their place on the battlefield. And we have a great opportunity, a great resource to help them as they fill that need. We are at the end of my presentation. I hope that it is not the end tonight of my ministry. But I hope that for each one of you, you see it as the beginning of your ministry to help train young men, and for that matter, young women, to do the work long after we're gone, or at least until Jesus comes. Would you bow with me? I'd like to pray for those young individuals who will serve the King, and for each of us as we serve to mentor them into the future. Father, thank you so much for the opportunity that you lay before each one of us to serve you. It is, as the Apostle Paul described it, it is grace that bestows that opportunity on us, for we are unworthy, being the chief of all sinners, to be given such a grand task to serve you in your kingdom. We are thankful for the adoption as sons that is ours because of Jesus Christ. But we are almost without words to thank you for the inheritance as you have promoted us to be firstborn in your kingdom. Father, for those who are currently preaching the word, wherever they are, in this town, in this state, in this country, throughout the world, I pray that you will use them as your instruments, that you will open doors of opportunities, that you will provide resources for them, that you will keep them from harm as they advance the cause of Christ, as those faithful ones who have gone before have done. But Father, may we each be touched more than just in our mind, but in our heart as well, to realize that the opportunities are still great. For those young men to take pulpit positions, for young men to serve in other ministry responsibilities, for young women to work alongside of them and they themselves to take on ministry opportunities. Father, there will be this coming Sunday dozens, if not hundreds, of empty pulpits waiting for men to take their place, looking for resources that they might fund to have someone work with them. Father, we know that the evil one works even amongst us to destroy those opportunities. May we simply not become his instruments, but may we become resources of prayer, of encouragement, of financial provision. Father, I'm thankful for this church and their vision some 13 years ago to train young men for ministry, for leadership, to be godly men, to be godly fathers, and godly husbands, to work in your kingdom, whether full-time, part-time, but to make a difference in a world that so desperately needs to hear about Jesus. I'm thankful and I pray for those young men who have recently been in this program and have been in programs like it for the past 40-plus years that these kinds of programs have been offered. I pray that you care for them, that you grow them up in faith and experience, that they might always preach the word in such a way as to communicate to the heads and hearts of those who need to hear about Jesus. Father, I'm thankful for this night, for this group of listeners and their willingness to consider these things. I thank you for all of these things in the name of your Son, Jesus Christ. Amen. Thank you, everyone.